What is the state? How does it preserve itself? What does it fear? These are the questions Murray Rothbard uncovers in his powerful book, Anatomy of the State. Thanks to our generous donors, the Mises Institute is offering a free copy of this Rothbard classic to Human Action Podcast listeners. Get your copy at Mises.org/HAPodFree. That's H-A, like human action, pod free. This is the Human Action Podcast, where we debunk the economic, political, and even cultural myths of the days. Here's your host, Dr. Bob Murphy.
Daniel, welcome to the Human Action Podcast.
Hey, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm glad you were able to do this. For those who caught, I interviewed you a while back on the Bob Murphy Show, and it was, I don't know if you remember this, Daniel, but like I was struck with laryngitis, basically.
Right.
But we went ahead and plowed through, and so this one, I'll do a little more talking than last time, but mostly this is going to be your forum. So,
hey, don't threaten me with a good time.
Yeah. So for the benefit of our viewers who don't know who you are, can you just very briefly explain your background, and then we'll jump right into the breaking news regarding the possibility of Texit?
Sure. So for those who didn't catch it, my name is Daniel Miller, and I'm president of an organization called the Texas Nationalist Movement. It was founded in 2005 to win the political, cultural, and economic independence of Texas. But I've been working on the Texas independence issue since August of 1996.
Okay, great. And you have a great book on Texit that, of course, folks will link to. But the reason I wanted to get Daniel on so quickly when I saw this news is you guys had a very happy announcement recently. Do you want to talk about the primary and what's going to happen?
Yeah. So back in June, we launched a petition campaign under a never before used section of the Texas Election Code. Texas is not an initiative and referendum state. So to find anything remotely close to it in the code is like finding, the Hope Diamond, right? So under this particular section of the election code, we launched a petition campaign that allows voters by petition to place ballot propositions or questions on a party's primary ballot. And so we launched that campaign in June, petitioning to place the question, should the state of Texas reassert its status as an independent nation? And so this last weekend, we announced to the state Republican Executive Committee of our intention on by the deadline to turn in the requisite number of signatures to place the question on the ballot in the March primaries.
Well, great. Do you have any guess as to how you think that'll turn out?
Which part? The how the Republican Party reacts, or how the vote will turn out?
I had meant the latter, but why don't you do the former first?
Yeah, well, you know, so all of this news broke because this last weekend was the fourth quarter meeting of the state Republican Executive Committee. And just to give folks context about how it here is here in Texas, the Republican Party is the dominant political party, right? They have every statewide elected office, majorities in both houses. I mean, they are the dominant political party. So this is not a, you know, an insubstantial thing that we're trying to do. And so in the fourth quarter is when typically the state Republican Executive Committee meets to set their list of ballot propositions, which is something they do every 2 years. That's where we announced to them and actually gave them an opportunity to place it on the ballot themselves without us essentially having to enforce the issue with the petition. So, long story short, that they made the choice not to do that. It was only a margin of like five or six votes, I think is how it went down. But they, you know, they're well aware of what's going down. And of course the normal sort of, I think hyperbolic pearl clutching is going on. I mean, we had a former congressman who's on the SREC, get up and talk about how it's borderline treasonous. And, you know, it was obvious that he at some point got baptized one too many times in the waters of the Potomac. But you know, it's just sort of a lot of that normal nonsense. But it really breaks the way that we think. It ultimately will break as far as the argumentation goes when it goes on the primary. So here's why we push so hard for this vote, understanding that even though it's not a legally binding vote, it is politically binding. We know what the poll numbers show about support within the Republican Party. You know, Survey USA did probably the most recent and conclusive poll on this issue here in Texas and found that 76% of Republican voters support the proposition. We know that there's also substantial support among Democrats and independents as well, well over a majority. So bottom line for us is we've always believed that if it goes to a vote, it wins, and it doesn't win by a little, it wins by a lot. And it's been that way, I believe, since probably 2014. That said, you know, we have to gird up for battle. You know, it's not enough to collect the requisite number of signatures. We're sure the party will probably try to push back on it, which we've retained the top ballot and petition attorney in the country. We're loaded for bear. We know we're going to have to fight this every single step of the way, and we're ready for it. It's time to let the people of Texas have their say.
Wow, I didn't realize it. Just to make sure I understood what you said there, you said that poll showed among registered Republicans, 76% favored Texit or favored just having that on? Okay.
Yeah, and look, it was a bit of a bombshell for us to see concretely what we've been experiencing out in the field. You know, a lot of people don't realize, because the mainstream media does not want to talk about this issue. Polling on this has increased considerably over the years. And you know, it's very difficult to get really accurate polls because if you notice, a lot of the pollsters on this issue want to poll it across all the states or regions of states. They don't go state by state. And so Survey USA was, you know, they've been rated the most accurate political pollster in the country. Survey USA was the first one to go through, I think, 8 specific states, Texas being one of them. And the results were earth-shattering to people out there that were not really familiar with this issue. But to us, it was just reflective of everything that we had seen as we've been out there working with the public. People don't realize the TNM, outside of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, is the single largest political advocacy organization in the state, period, right? We have a statewide footprint. I mean, we've got more organization than the sitting governor. I mean, it's just the way that it works. But when those poll numbers broke, it was 60% of Texas voters, 66% of likely voters. And then when you start doing the partisan breakdowns, it was 76% Republican, 54% Democrat, 52% independent. I would have preferred to be a little bit stronger among independent voters. But, you know, let's when you start putting those numbers together, it just gives us that sense that when we go to the polls and we're able to make the case ahead of the vote, that we will win. And while this is just in a primary right now, this is a stepping stone to actually getting the Texas Independence Referendum Act passed and putting it to a vote of the entirety of the people of Texas.
Well, wow, I wish I had done more research, because I tweeted out, or X'd out, as they now prefer, when you had your announcement, you know, saying these results, and I retweeted that, and then some cynic chimed in saying, like, even if they do get it on, you know, it's going to get crushed because, you know, the sheeple have been brainwashed and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah.
And then I said, well, you know, I said, I don't know exactly what their predictions are, but I think it's like a long game strategy of, we get it on the ballot. Yeah, maybe it doesn't pass the first time, but that just makes it tangible. It gets in the conversation. It gets over the shock value. And then maybe the next time. But no, you're saying you think, again, in the primary, you think that this thing would overwhelmingly pass if they actually let it go through?
Absolutely. And look, people may not understand facts, but people understand their pain, right? People may not have the specific knowledge that they need, but they can understand opportunity. And when it comes to start, you know, looking at this question, I mean, we know that when everything is certified and we know for certain that you know, we're not going to have to go fight this thing out in court or whatever. When it goes on that ballot, the real battle begins, because it will be the talk, right? I mean, everyone's going to talk about the fact. And so what that does is it starts to have, we start to have those conversations about the relationship between the, you know, the people of Texas and the federal system. And people begin to ask themselves questions. And, you know, at the risk of being repetitive, because I said this on your show, the fact of the matter is that the real question that people are going to be asking themselves, and because, frankly, we're going to force this question, is, look, if Texas was independent right now, knowing everything you know about the federal government, would you vote to join the union?
That's a great way.
I mean, would you give it up? And you know, like I said, people know their pain. And here in Texas, the pain is border and immigration, it's economy, it is federal overreach, governance, erosion of rights. You know, it's a lot of bread and butter issues that the federal government has never really been called to account for. The votes like this do exactly that thing.
Okay, well, that's even more exciting. I didn't realize about those poll results. And so can I ask, what do you think is going to happen? Are they going to just like ignore it and just, you know, basically, would it be breaking the law or, you know, if they don't put it on?
Yeah, I mean, it would be. I mean, the code is pretty unambiguous. It is a bit Byzantine. I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. And if you look at it, we still can't figure out to this day why it's even in the code. But sometime in the 1980s, someone thought it would be a great idea to pass a law to allow voters to place questions by petition on primary ballots. It makes no sense, because we don't have that anywhere else except at a municipal level here in Texas. But, you know, there are pieces and parts of the code, but it seems pretty unambiguous. It's, you know, you collect the requisite number of signatures, which, you know, for this particular election cycle, it's 97,709 is the floor. And, you know, we're well beyond that. By the SREC meeting, we were well over 102,000. Actually, we were over 103, even though it's 102 in the letter. But, you know, we're going to probably screech in there looking like, I think on the 11th, we're on track to be able to deliver 120,000 plus. So it's, you know, it's not an insubstantial process to collect these petition signatures. The one thing they didn't do was make it easy. You know, that's why I think they at least gave us a 180-day window. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that it is not optional. You know, you cross the threshold under this section of the Texas Election Code, it goes on. And we're ready to go. If they challenge or create any kind of roadblocks to us or tell the people of Texas that they don't deserve to be heard, we'll see them in court.
Okay, great. Yeah, because, I mean, ultimately, they're in an awkward position. Because this isn't like, it'd be one thing if it got on the ballot and then it won overwhelmingly and they were alleging that, oh no, a lot of these were fake or, but for their stance to be, no, we don't even want it on the ballot. Like that's, you know what I mean? Like people know, well, what are you afraid of? Like what, you know?
Well, look, that was the message that they, that the executive committee sent. You know, if you go, there's clips circulating of the speech that I gave, and I had a very interesting opportunity. Because typically the only people who can speak at those meetings are executive committee members. And oddly enough, my representative in that body had resigned to run against the current Speaker of the House in Texas. And so they were filling his seat that day with a gentleman who actually is a supporter of ours. So he had enough time because of a prior commitment to get elected to that position and then hand in proxy paperwork to let me be his proxy for the meeting. So I got to get up at the executive committee meeting and actually argue for our position. And that was our position, which is, look, placing it on the ballot is not an endorsement of the outcome, right? It's very clear. You know, we're not saying that the Republican Party endorses it. Although I will say this, you know, many people don't realize, I believe you and I talked about it, but at the last convention, the party added two planks to its platform, both calling for the legislature to put this question to a vote of the people. So, you know, the SREC, was given an opportunity to acknowledge Article 1, Section 2 rights under the Texas Constitution, to be consistent with two planks of their platform, to show that they, unlike the Texas legislature, feel that the people, at a minimum, the people of Texas should be asked this question. And as a body, they decided no. So, you know, there is some reason to believe that they might try to push back on this. But, you know, Bob, I tell people all the time, we have to work twice as hard for half as much. Mm-hmm. You know, we're hammered by the political establishment. We're hammered or ignored by mainstream media. And this is going to, for it to win, it will always have to be driven by the people who support it.
Mm-hmm. Can you speculate, Daniel? I know it's hard to get inside other people's heads, but I'm just trying to get a sense, like the state of Texas, establishment Republicans, are they opposing this because they think, come on, guys, this is just a nut job thing. We know that this is just going to be embarrassing to us. We know this isn't really going anywhere. Or is it more like we need to stop this thing now because it might, do you get what I mean? Like, yeah. If it's the former, I would think they would just be wrong. But I'm just wondering, do you have a sense, is it just they think this is silly and we just look stupid to the rest of the country? And when we fly up to Washington, we feel funny about, oh yeah, you know, those rubes back home. Or do they really think this is a building thing that they got to quash?
Well, look, it really gets down to what they say publicly versus how they act privately. Right. Mm-hmm. And so when you take, and the best way to really answer this question is to break down that argument, right? If you think about it, when they say that this is a fringe issue, they say that no one believes in it, then the obvious best way to kill it is to put it on a ballot and just absolutely crush it, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if they put it on a ballot and 10% of the people came back and said they were in support of it and 90% said they were against it, then you would kill this issue inside the Republican Party for a generation. I mean, it would just absolutely destroy it. So from their standpoint, the best play that they could make if they ever wanted to quash this is to just put it on a ballot, let the people of Texas destroy it if they indeed believe what they say. But I will tell you how they act when this issue comes up tells you that they see the same poll numbers that we do, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's not like those poll numbers were secret. We didn't commission them. They were done by third parties. They poll it in races here in Texas. And so one of the things you almost never see is pro-Texas candidates getting the hit pieces and mailers from establishment incumbents because they don't want to give the issue oxygen because they know where the support is. You see occasionally mainstream media hit pieces, but 90% of what goes on with us is ignored by mainstream media because they don't want to fuel that option. And the political establishment does everything they can behind the scenes to cut the legs out from under us. And I'll tell you, that was a point that was brought home to me very clearly in 2015. What we did with the SREC this weekend, we did back in 2015. So that was 8 years ago. And the governor's office, Governor Abbott's office, was coordinating with members of the SREC to try to kill this resolution on the floor. See, we almost got it on the ballot props last time. But there was active coordination from the governor's office with people that were at that meeting, SREC reps, a coordinated effort to kill it. Well, if it is indeed a fringe issue, if no one believes in it and you really want to crush discussion about it, you put it on the ballot and you let the people of Texas speak.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One more on just trying to get inside the heads of the people at the Texas state level and the government. One might have thought, like, wouldn't the current governor or the person who's thinking about running for governor next term think ahead and be like, why be governor of Texas when I could be president of this new country? Like, wouldn't they want it for that reason? So why are they hesitant?
Well, I think it really gets down to a lot of different issues. I think a lot of these guys benefit from the conflict between the state and the federal government, right? So you have a lot of guys in the political establishment right now that are looking at, you know, climbing another rung on the political ladder that takes them to the federal government, you know, whether a congressman or senator or president. Additionally, you know, you got folks that are benefiting off that. I mean, let's be honest. This election cycle, we're going to be treated to mailer after mailer after mailer asking for funds for campaigns for candidates that say that they will fight to secure the border. Okay. That is the probably the number one rub right now in Texas politics is the issue with the border and the federal government. And, you know, that's a whole other discussion. But the fact of the matter is, as long as there is conflict between Texas and the federal government on certain issues, it's much easier for them to raise money. And we know that money means, you know, money pretty much equates to getting elected. And that's not just here in Texas. That's everywhere. So there are a lot of, I think, reasons that these political establishment types want to fight against it, right? Because they're somehow benefiting off of it. But that being said, you are seeing, and it started last cycle, you're starting to see challengers to these incumbents embrace this sort of Texas first mentality. Our organization launched a website at taketexasback.com just specifically for candidates who wanted to pledge their support for a vote on Texas. And last cycle, all of the current governor, Greg Abbott's major challengers, signed that pledge and proclaimed publicly on more than a half dozen occasions that they supported the vote for the people of Texas to vote on this issue. And I will tell you, not this SREC meeting this last weekend, but the one before, one of our executive leaders in the organization was approached by a congressman, sitting congressman, who said that they are looking toward perhaps leaving D.C. so they can come and run for president of an independent Texas. And it was not said tongue in cheek. So I think there is a sense by some that this is on the horizon. They want to see more tangible, more concrete progress. I get it. Progress is slow on these issues, but I think that this having this on the primary ballot is just sort of a next step in this process.
Okay, well that's very encouraging, and yeah, that makes sense that you know they're going to wait a little bit, but once it becomes more tangible, more realistic, then I think you're going to see the floodgates open. Nobody wants to back a loser.
Bob, you can always trust a politician to go jump in front of the parade.
Exactly. That's a great way of putting it. Okay, so if we can switch gears, and folks probably know, familiar with my work, I'm a big fan. I've written a pamphlet on an independent Texas supporting it and such. So I'll ask these sort of as a devil's advocate just to give you, Daniel, the chance to really defend this idea or this movement.
Sure.
So one thing that people I've heard say lately is, "What are you guys talking about? Texas is going blue. They're not gonna support this."
Yeah, it's an interesting thought process when people say that because it tells you that they don't look at voter turnout. You know, but my take on this and it has been for quite some time, and it's based primarily on the work and the support that we see in areas that people would technically call blue areas, you know. So take a place like Harris County or Houston. When you look at voter turnout in those areas, it's pathetic. I mean, you've got tons and tons of registered voters that don't darken the door of a polling place. And the part of the reason is they feel disenfranchised. Why do they feel disenfranchised? Because they don't have any options. So, you know, they it's basically in their minds rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. And you see that level of disenfranchisement all over the place. But that being said, I would just suggest anyone who thinks that Texas is turning blue because of Austin or Dallas, well, take Austin out of the equation. That's a different story. But Dallas or you know, Houston or San Antonio, understand that the voters haven't really spoken yet. The idea that Texas is somehow turning blue should be a concern, but I'm less concerned about it turning blue than I am about it turning into a fiefdom of the federal government. You know, having all of our sovereignty eroded and making it so that there is only one party. That's a problem. And that is where I think the trajectory of this ultimately lands. So people can talk about, you know, these inner cities, but, you know, and, you know, these big urban areas turning Texas blue. What they really need to be concerned about is getting the federal government out of the equation so that that doesn't matter.
Right. Okay. Let's go ahead and jump to the big one. If you guys did pull this off somehow, Washington would just invade you. So, I mean, that's what happened last time. So,
well, as long as they do like they did in Afghanistan, just leave us all the military hardware. I mean, what difference does it make, right?
No.
No, it's a myth. I mean, you have to understand that when people talk about things in those terms, typically these are the same people that are flying the Ukraine flag in their profile on X or Twitter or whatever you want to call it, right? That are railing against Russia for its invasion of the Ukraine and its violation of its sovereignty and all those sorts of things, right? You know, these are the same people that decry China's occupation of Tibet, right? It's that sort of, it's that same sort of thing. But yet here their argument is, oh, you're going to get invaded by the United States. It's not what's going to happen at all. This isn't the 1800s, right? We left the 19th century a long time ago. And so you can look at it for a lot of different practical reasons why it won't happen. We know from a Zogby poll back about, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, they didn't like their poll results when they surveyed active duty military and asked them if they believed that states had an absolute right to withdraw from the Union. And half of the soldiers came back and said, yeah, absolutely, 100%. So, you know, you look at things from practical terms where the United States, say, decides, the federal government decides they want to react badly. What are they reacting badly to? Texans voting wrong, right? I mean, we're not there. Nobody's going to go occupy the post office in Austin. That's not how this works anymore. This is not a we vote today, we're independent tomorrow kind of situation. You know, there's a process involved. But that being said, if the federal government decided that they wanted to suppress the vote, you know, if they wanted to send in the troops, what happens is you fracture the military straight down the middle, which, you know, they can't operate if they do that, from the Joint Chiefs all the way down to the enlisted. You invite global condemnation, which is affects security. It affects the economy. I mean, there's all kinds of things that happen. And then you have other states that are sympathetic to the concerns that Texas has about our relationship with the federal government. And so while Texas might be the first to leave, we definitely wouldn't be the last. And I suspect some of those states would not even want a referendum. At the end of the day, the process that we have laid in place ensures that the people of Texas get heard in a full, fair vote across every Texan, right? And if it comes back in the affirmative, there is a way laid out for us to begin a process to get this thing done that eventually leads with Texas being a self-governing independent nation. No one's looking at anything knee-jerk, you know, nothing to trigger Uncle Scam, but, you know, it definitely sets us on a path to independence.
Okay, well, that's interesting, that last point there about the it's not like they would be voting and saying, okay, next Thursday, we're all just going to stop paying federal income tax, like that it would be a process, and therefore at what point would they start dropping bombs? Like, that doesn't really, like, surely the day after when, you know, this would be reported at and on MSNBC that, oh, it came in and, you know, 71 to whatever percent voted in favor, it's probably not that heavy bombing would occur in Dallas.
Oh, look, let's be honest. You know, there's a swath of people inside the United States that'll be very happy for Texas to leave. I mean, that's just the bottom line. But those other folks are not going to tolerate a video of a bombed out Walmart in Houston, Texas on their news at night, you know, and dropping you know, cruise missiles on grandma's house. I mean, for what crime? I mean, we voted wrong. We voted in a way that they didn't like. So,
or you know, the way I put it is to say that they thought Thomas Jefferson was serious, you know, yeah. when he said,
yeah, I thought that was just pillow talk, Tom.
Yeah.
You know, but it's, you know, it's that way when people come at you with these objections about they're going to invade, it just tells you they don't understand what the process is. They are stuck in a very superficial understanding of something that happened in the 19th century and have absolutely 100% forgotten that about 140 brand new self-governing independent nation states have been born since World War II. We don't live in the 19th century anymore. We're in the 21st century. You know, no one was foolish enough to think that, you know, given the process that happened in Scotland, if the Scottish folks had voted in favor, that all of a sudden, you know, the British Air Force was going to start dropping bombs on Edinburgh. No one was foolish or stupid enough to say, well, if the Brexit vote goes through, then, you know, the European countries are going to send their armies to occupy London. I mean, there are processes that take place now in Western democracies where, you know, this just doesn't happen. And honestly, you know, and I understand, and Bob, don't get me wrong. I understand that people are very distrustful of what the federal government does. We all, I think, acknowledge that they seem to be quite inconsistent on a lot of things. However, this is one issue where if they are inconsistent, it has massive repercussions. I mean, a wrong move by the federal government in the negative toward Texans who pass a law, have a vote, and then begin a process of enacting what the will of the people is according to that vote. One wrong move by the federal government, you know, yeah, if people are worried about it destroying the United States, that's what does it, but that's not us. That's the federal government doing that. So, you know, at the end of the day, Texas ends up being independent. We make our choice. They've got to make their choice.
Also, too, and I'm sure, you know, people in this area have heard this a lot, but just for the benefit, in case someone's new to this idea, that I could understand if somebody said, hey, guys, I totally feel for you. And yeah, it would be great if you were allowed to leave. But you know what? Those people in Washington are psychopaths and they're killers. And I you know, I don't want to risk my kid. You know, if I live in Dallas, I would be afraid to vote for this because, you know, who knows what they'll do. They'll like say that, you know, there's terrorist cells or something. I could understand that because what makes no sense to me are like right winger patriotic people saying what you guys are doing is treasonous in any way. They would just bomb you. And it's like, you know what I mean? Like it's sort of like, well, why are you patriotic then if you're admitting that, you know, this country is founded on a sham and we don't believe in self-determination and the lectures we give to China and Russia are completely hypocritical. You know what I mean? Like that's what I don't get. Like, patriotic, America-loving conservatives who also say you guys are silly because Washington would just bomb you into submission if you tried to leave.
Well, look, Sam Houston said that Texas has yet to learn submission to any source, no matter where it comes, right? And that's a paraphrase, but you get the point. You know, at the end of the day, Bob, you have to do the right thing. Right. And you have to ask yourself what the status quo looks like. It's, you know, if indeed people do believe that, then they have to ask themselves what it is that they really believe. Are they willing to kick the can down the road to the next generation or the generation after that, knowing exactly the trajectory of the federal government? Because, look, none of those people can make the case that the federal government has gotten any better. The relationship has never improved. It's only gotten worse. And so, you know, do we as a generation take responsibility for this? You know, do we step up and answer the call? Because I would say that it's better that we do it than leave it to our children or grandchildren to do it. The alternative to us gaining our independence is frankly unacceptable. And so the federal government is going to have to do what it does. You know, that's their choice to make. But at the end of the day, they've gamed it out too. They know that the only way they stop this is with anti-exit propaganda, before the vote, during the vote, and then drag their heels like petulant children during the negotiation phase. There is no military or economic option on the table for them after the people of Texas speak that does not end in a fatal death spiral by the federal government.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that. And again, just to finish the train of thought, and then I'll jump to a different question here for you, Daniel. But the analogy I used in my pamphlet, and I wasn't the one to come up with this, is you know, you could imagine like if you know some woman who's got an abusive boyfriend or husband, and you might say, well, gee, maybe you should leave that relationship. And she might say, I can't because he'll, you know, really hurt me. And that might make, you know, that could be true. And depending on the guy and the situation. And so maybe, right, it would be reckless for her to pack her bags and leave next Thursday because he really might do something and the police aren't going to protect her. You know, but you wouldn't therefore conclude, so I'm just going to stay married to him forever and make the best. You know what I mean? Like you yeah. would say, okay, well then come up with some more long-term plan, but you wouldn't just say, well, I can't leave because he'll kill me, and then go back. Okay. So what are we getting for, you know, groceries tonight? And what movie are we watching on this weekend? Like, that's what I'm saying is so weird about the conservative types who say, you know, USA, this, you know, love this, you know, Lincoln saved the Union. And by the way, you can't leave because it will kill you.
Yeah. And Bob, I think it's, you know, and I think it's also important to mention the distinction, you know, and I am cognizant of the people out there that are just, they have a hard time getting their head around this because they love America. You know, we've been told all along, you know, from day one, what you're doing is un-American. But what people fail to grasp is there is a very big difference between America and the United States of America. You know, the United States of America is a political and economic union that is comprised of several sovereign states that have agreed to free trade, right, to a central currency, that have agreed to a postal convention, mutual defense pact like NATO. I mean, that's what as an institution, that's what the United States of America is. But America is that set of ideals, you know, when that ostensibly were shared by the states that founded the Union. But now we're in a situation where the political and economic institution known as the United States of America is so far divorced from the principles under which that union was founded that they are two separate things. So I don't view what we're doing as un-American at all. I mean, you mentioned Thomas Jefferson a moment ago. The discussion we're having is the most American thing you could possibly do right now.
Right.
It is to start questioning whether or not things are the way that they should be and that best serve us. And so I would just challenge people when they think about it in those terms to look at the United States of America, that federal government, as this institution that has effectively become the greatest enemy to America and those principles under which it was founded. And for us to mount a return to those principles is going to require states to do what Texas is doing right now, to stand up and say, look, we're going to become a self-governing independent nation. And we would encourage every other state to have the same conversation, have the same vote. And if they decide to stay in that union, fine. And if not, that's fine too. But at the end of the day, we can trade with one another. We can agree to defend one another. We can travel between one another. We can be friends with one another. But at the end of the day, let California govern California. Let Texas govern Texas. Let New Hampshire govern New Hampshire, let New York govern New York, and then we'll all be happy.
Mm-hmm. And people with more options like that can move, you know, depending on the immigration policies of the various, you know, newly independent regions. If people don't like what Texas is doing as an independent thing, they can go move to the Republic of California and so forth.
Which is already, look, it's already happening. You know, when the last census came out, there was a net in migration from states. You know, I mean, we were piling on probably as many movers as we were new births. I mean, it was just this massive influx. And people said, oh, my God, they're moving in to turn Texas into a liberal paradise like the place they left. And it's like, no, that's not what's happening. You know, you can account for some of that to corporate relocation, you know, these tech companies moving from California. But by and large, they were people that were moving here as political, cultural, and economic refugees from states. And they came to Texas, many of them with the mindset that at some point, Texas will be independent, and they wanted to get here before it happened. But others, because the way Texas is, aligned more with their personal values. And so, you know, you're seeing this sort of transition happen already. But that being said, I think a lot of it happening here in Texas, and I've spoken with countless people that literally moved here because they are anticipating Texas leaving the union sooner rather than later.
Well, yeah, and I would imagine if and when that referendum or the proposition on the ballot or the primary goes through as you're saying it would, I would think like lots of people who can work from, you know, who work online basically, and, you know, independent people run, you know, small business owners that can just be anywhere that could easily relocate if they wanted to, would just, like you're saying, just run the numbers and be like, holy, if there's even a 10% chance I don't have to pay federal income tax 5 years from now, I want to get in there before the property values go through the roof.
My inbox is full of those. I mean, since the news broke and, you know, they that we'd crossed the threshold, and, you know, when it hit Newsweek and all these other places, my inbox is flooded with people saying essentially that same thing. You know, look, I've been watching this for a long time. And, you know, and if we're that close, I've got to start making my preparations to get there now. I just tell people, get here before you need a visa to get in.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's just go through, cause I'm sure most of the listeners, you know, to this podcast are of course in principle supportive of the idea, liking decentralization, period. The ideas of federalism, of course, again, very American ideals here that we're talking about. What about just like some of the practicality though, that geez, Daniel, like, aren't there a bunch of people getting like Social Security or somebody who's been paying in all this time, and what are they just going to forfeit that, or how's that going to work?
You know, every time I hear the Social Security question now, I just have to ask, are you winding me up, or is this, are you pranking? Is this, are you punking me? Is that what's happening? No. Look, it was for many years, the most asked question that we got. And I always found it odd because we didn't have to really answer the question. I mean, we answered it, but we didn't have to because it's already answered by federal law. And under the federal system currently, you can collect your federal pension benefits regardless of your residence, as long as you don't move to Iran, Syria, North Korea, any place that's currently under banking sanctions for, you know, being state sponsors of terrorism. So, you know, you think about it, around the world, there are people that have retired and moved to Mexico or moved to other countries that are still drawing federal pension benefits. So, you know, people that are getting scared by the Social Security question just need to look at what the federal government says about it. And the federal government says, live wherever you like, you get your federal pension benefits.
Okay. What about money? How's that going to work? Are you guys going to still use the U.S. dollar, or is there going to be now the Texas something currency unit, the TCU? How's that going to work?
Yeah, so short term, I mean, obviously, because there is a transition period that we've mentioned before, currency is a pretty straightforward proposition. Things are as they are until they cease to be that way, until they're changed. So Texas could continue to use the U.S. dollar in the transition to our own currency, but that's eventually where the people of Texas are going to want to land. I mean, a lot of the angst that Texans feel toward the federal system deals with monetary policy, the economy. I mean, they don't think of it as monetary policy. They think of it as, I go to put gas in my car or go buy groceries for my family, and it's getting increasingly difficult for me to afford it. So Texas will eventually adopt its own currency. And, you know, we don't have to have, well, suddenly you can't use the U.S. dollar. That's a lie, right? You continue to use what you got till you transition to something else. That said, I think it's important for people to understand, though, that Texas is already sort of close to that. And something that went really, I think, whizzed by everyone's heads when it happened many years ago was during the formation of the Texas Gold Depository. The big headline when the legislation passed was that Texas is getting its own Fort Knox. What they missed was the provision in there that authorized the comptroller to create a system of electronic transaction denominated by deposits in the depository. So the framework is there. There were actually two or three pieces of legislation to take that even further in this last session. They actually got some traction, but a little too late in the session. And so, but they were effectively building on what we already have. So it would have, by all in, for all intents and purposes, created a Texas currency, one that was, you know, one that would be based off stable value, things of that nature. So, yeah, I mean, Texas will have its own currency, and we're actually already close enough. We can almost taste it.
Just to make sure I understood that last point there, you're saying it would be easy to issue claims on like a gold stockpile?
Yeah. So Texas, so just, you know, historically, let me just kind of run back the clock a bit. So several years ago, the Texas legislature passed legislation that created a Texas gold depository. It's Texas Bullion Depository. Where not only the state and state entities, but individuals could store precious metals. And the legislation was fantastic because it you know, exempted deposits from confiscation, ensured that the state would not allow federal confiscation. I mean, there was a lot of great things to it, but tucked in there was this provision that directed our comptroller to create a system of electronic transaction denominated by deposits of precious metal in the depository. So essentially what it did was, and which to me I thought was pretty revolutionary for the time, was it said, look, we're going to put the gold, we're going to put, you know, the precious metals in here for the state. We're going to allow citizens to do it. And then we're going to allow them to transact on those metals with an electronic layer, right? No script, but with an electronic layer. And it was, I thought it was pretty revolutionary at the time. And honestly, that was the greatest part about that piece of legislation. I mean, the depository had to be created and that made all the headlines. But that section about that, well, the comptroller, you know, it took them a while to get the depository off the ground, right? They had to get the site, they had to get the location, you know, they had to contract. I mean, there was a lot that needed to be done. And so it delayed the comptroller getting it done. So in the meantime, in this last session, he had about two or three pieces of legislation that sort of took that aspect of it and amplified it and even moved it closer to what I think would be a functional Texas currency in lieu of what the United States dollar is. So, you know, we hated that it didn't get traction. We actually thought there was enough momentum to get it called in one of Greg Abbott's special session calls. But, you know, there were much bigger fish to fry as we're experiencing a pretty heavy duty political civil war right here in Texas right now. So
also, too, I mean, right now, like, as a tourist, if you go especially to a tourist spot in Mexico, you're not going to have any trouble getting people, merchants to accept dollar, you know, U.S. dollar bills. Right. You know, they might not give you the best exchange rate, but if you go to a restaurant or something, a lot of times even the menus will have the prices in both, you know, pesos and dollars.
Sure.
And so likewise, you know, if Texas leaves, the merchants are allowed, you know, foreigners, namely people from neighboring states coming in and spending stuff, or even local people, you're allowed to still hold dollars. People around the world can hold $100 bills if they want.
Sure. I mean, look, it's, you know, I talk about it in the Texas book. You know, and try to explain this in pretty straightforward terms. There are countries around the world that have actually unilaterally adopted the U.S. dollar as their currency. You know, it's referred to as an informal currency union. And while that may work for those countries and may work for us on a transitional basis, you know, at the end of the day, Texas is going to want to be able to set its own monetary policy. I suspect that given sort of the mindset of Texas when it comes to the economy, that Texas floats a currency and it suddenly jumps from the eighth largest economy in the world to perhaps the, you know, sixth or seventh, you know, just with that one act alone, particularly with as much as trade as happens here. But look, you know, merchants can accept whatever they want to. And the U.S. dollar, for all, you know, if regardless of its flaws, is still pretty much king currency around the world.
Yeah. So I just making sure people realize that it's not that, oh, gee, everyone has to switch over to whatever the government told me, you know, like, you know, you're allowed. They're not going to be pointing guns at people and say, stop using those pictures of dead U.S. presidents. It's just like you say, once they give an option of a gold backed Texas currency, or, you know, people can use whatever the heck they want, they probably would, you know, over time shift into that, thus making the people in Texas less vulnerable to whatever it is that the Federal Reserve does.
Well, and look, I'll tell you, one of the pieces of legislation that was floated was a constitutional amendment, which was essentially the right to use money, the right to use currency. And essentially, they wanted to pass a constitutional amendment that secured the right for individuals and businesses to use whatever currency they wanted to, whether it's, you know, Bitcoin or Ethereum or gold and silver, whatever it is. They wanted to be able to enshrine in the Texas Bill of Rights the ability to transact freely. And it was one of those, that set of bills that we thought would probably get across the finish line, but it just got into the session too late.
Okay, interesting. Another issue that you see is people say, hey, this is illegal. And, you know, when I was doing my research for my writing on this, I was pleasantly surprised to see that in the original Texas Constitution, that was a condition of them joining the Union, they came up with a constitution that exclusively reserved the right to say, hey, if the people ever change their mind, we can leave. And the feds at the time agreed to that. They signed off on it. It's, you know what I mean? So it wasn't like it was a unilateral thing. So to me, it's like, I understand, like, you could make a natural law argument and just, you know, appeal to Thomas Jefferson or whatever. But yeah, I'm saying, no, even the letter of the law, like, I don't see how anyone could possibly argue if the people of Texas overwhelmingly voted that they wanted to, you know, initiate this procedure, how anyone from Washington could even prima facie claim that what they're doing is illegal.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, look, words matter. And so when you have some of these opposing dimwits, and I'm self-editing there because I have much harsher language for them typically. But when you see these dimwits say, claim that it's illegal, you know, you want to say, okay, so let me ask you a question. If a policeman came to you, said you were under arrest, slapped handcuffs on you, and stuffed you in the back of a cop car, your first question is going to be, what am I under arrest for? Well, you're under arrest for, they make up some particular crime. Okay. Oh, great. So the first thing you're going to do, you're going to just shut up and accept that somebody said it was illegal? Or are you going to be like, no, I want to know the law that I broke. Mm-hmm. Right. That's how normal people would operate. But when you look at these people who come out and say secession is illegal, the first question to them is, or the first, you know, demand is, show me the law. If it is illegal, you got two bites at the apple. Go find the federal law or go find the state law. And if it's not in either one of those, then it's not illegal. And guess what? Spoiler alert. I mean, I shouldn't save them any time. I should force them down that rabbit hole. But spoiler alert, it's not a crime in either of those. It's not rendered illegal under the law. So then they come back and they say it's unconstitutional. Cool. Break out the Constitution. Please show me article and section where it is unconstitutional. Again, you got two bites at the apple. You got the federal constitution and you got the state constitution. Spoiler alert, Article 1, Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution lists everything states are forbidden from doing. Guess what's not on that list? Withdrawing from the Union. So under the 10th Amendment, which is very specific, if it's not, you know, granted to the federal government or prohibited to the states, it is reserved to the states. It's not prohibited, so go to the Texas Constitution. Article 1, Section 2, our Texas Bill of Rights, is very explicit that the people have at all times the inalienable right to alter, reform, or abolish our government in such manner as we may think expedient. That means we can do it any way we want to, right? Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is, that so then they fall back, go, okay, well, When I said illegal, I meant unconstitutional. But when I said unconstitutional, I meant, well, the Supreme Court said. Really? So what did the Supreme Court say? Well, Texas versus White said that states can't leave the union. No, that's not what it says at all. Actually, it's contradictory, and it even doesn't matter anymore. Texas versus White, when you look at Salmon P. Chase, his Chief Justice, his opinion in this, he talks about an indissoluble union comprised of indestructible states. And people say, well, that means it can't leave. It's like, well, wait a minute. Chase actually listed two ways, even his own opinion, that he could see that states leave by revolution or by consent of the states. So he didn't say that they couldn't leave. As a matter of fact, he gave two examples of it. But then none of that matters because he based it upon a tenuous connection between the preamble of the Constitution and the Articles of Confederation, which was rendered moot by Jacobson v. Massachusetts when the Supreme Court came back on a completely different case, but issued this blanket pronouncement that said that the federal government can derive no powers whatsoever from the preamble to the Constitution unless they are explicit in the document itself. So because Chase based everything upon the preamble, Texas versus White is dead. So, you know, these people that throw these things out there about the illegality, the unconstitutionality, about the Supreme Court, Bob, 99.9% of those people have never cracked the book on the subject. Not one. They are regurgitating some garbage that they heard from somebody else, typically the mainstream media, or, you know, something they looked at on Wikipedia, and that's it.
Well, Daniel, for folks who do want to crack a book, can you tell them again the title of your book and where they can go to find it?
Sure thing. My book is called Texit, Why and How Texas Will Leave the Union. It's published by Defiance Press, and it's available. You can go to our website at tnm.me or Amazon, Barnes & Noble. I mean, it's everywhere.
And folks, my guest has been Daniel Miller of the Texas Nationalist Movement. Daniel, thanks so much for your time and your insights.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate it, as always.
And thank you, folks, for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
Check back next week for a new episode of the Human Action Podcast. In the meantime, you can find more content like this on Mises.org.